Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith. Sports Radio WEEI. The countdown is on. I think we're about 20 minutes away from the liquid oxycodone kicking in.
Oh, Ross, are you ready for that?
I'll be singing show tunes here by the bottom of the hour. Chris Mannix is going to join us and go, who the hell is that?
He might work blue. You got to be careful back there.
Anything could
happen.
I'm just
going to flip it right over the AM feed.
Yeah, smart.
Anything could happen here. We mentioned briefly at the top of the hour the whole the origination this weekend of the AAF.
Now,
AAF.
I know.
I actually listened to AAF more this weekend than I watched the AAF.
Yeah,
that's definitely true.
I am one of those people who had zero faith in the AAF succeeding, even less faith in the XFL succeeding, which happens a year from now.
I know. I can't wait.
I do think that there is a limit to how much football even the most fervent football fans have.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me, I said over the weekend that I was finding a hard cranking up enough interest in the AAF. And the guy said, well, if you gamble on it. I said, how the hell do you gamble on this? Do you know anybody on any roster?
with money.
I know how you two gamble, which
is... with money.
Just throwing it good money after bad.
Wherever you want.
Do people actually gamble on rosters they don't know?
Of course they do,
Dale. Or teams they don't understand?
Next month, there's going to be people taking wagers on spring training baseball.
Yeah,
it happens. You can bet on anything.
Unbelievably
for
stupid.
For sure. Yeah, this was... I didn't even realize this was the weekend. I saw it on Twitter. I didn't watch any of it. And I understand that the ratings were pretty good. Part of it just has to be intrigue. Like, I'm sure it's like week one of a TV show. Like, all right, I'll give it a shot. But I don't know if you're going to necessarily go back to it. And then next year, it's going to be really bizarre when you have two of these leagues competing against each other. I don't know how that's going to work. But I wonder if the NFL is ever going to try to absorb one of these leagues and treat it as a minor league. Like, remember NFL Europe? It kind of had that where there were guys who were... belong to certain franchises. Like, they would have like the little patch, like, oh, that guy's on the Chargers, that's cute, and like they would have like little things on their uniform. I wonder if they would try to do that, because without any kind of connection there to the NFL, I really don't care. Now, I know there are plenty of people out there who just love football. Football is their absolute favorite thing, and that's great. God bless you. You're gonna like this league, I bet. But for me, it's like, perfect. Now, more time watching basketball, more time watching hockey. I even like college basketball. I still have plenty of things to watch. Baseball's like a month away. I'm good with a little bit of a break from football. And then you get excited about it. The draft comes up. You can talk all about that. And then you get into preseason just around the corner. I don't need, as much as I love football, and I love it, I don't need it to be 12 months.
The Dale and Keefe Twitter feed sent out the video of the quarterback getting destroyed.
Yeah, nice
and
hit.
The helmet getting popped off.
NFL blitz.
And I understand completely that if you're the AAF, or especially when the XFL comes out, what you're going to sell is, if you think the NFL has become too soft, too watered down, we're bringing the violence back.
Yeah.
We're going to bring, which sounds great. And
right.
And it's there's a certain element out there who miss that, who are going to gravitate to that at least to start. And that's all well and good until, as I said, somebody ends up in a hospital for a month.
Yeah, but what's that going to do?
And then what they're going to do is say, ooh, you know what? Maybe we have to look at what the NFL's
Why?
Doing
because
and protect players
but
more.
But not in this league, though, Dale, because that guy that got hit, what was his name? I don't know either. Right? Like,
yeah,
that's my whole point.
But when his name appears on a lawsuit against league.
So you're worried about lawsuits then?
Well, I just think that they can't survive them.
Why?
If some guy
gets... So what's he going to do? He's like, oh, I got hurt playing football? So what's the deal? I don't understand that.
In the same way the NFL has decided, we can't let that happen anymore. We can't afford the lawsuits
anymore.
Yeah, but
wasn't that more because they were sort of ignoring these things and like the way that was sort of... policed before? I don't think they were aware of head injuries, or they didn't talk about them as much. I don't think that's their fear. And if anything, it's not like if Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady goes down, or Deshaun Watson gets down, or Drew Brees, they just have nameless, faceless quarterback get hurt, they're going to bring up another nameless, faceless quarterback. So I think their only way of succeeding is the big hits. They need every weekend when these games are played to have a highlight on SportsCenter or to have a Twitter video start trending because of a hit. That's their best chance of survival. If they don't have that, then it's just minor league football.
There were a couple of things, and this always happens, where you get some innovation and you look at it and you say, you know what? I like that. The whole officials replay thing. The NFL should take a page from the AAF's book. Go live. Listen to what they're saying. This and actually here,
right.
I don't know who the woman was.
Yeah,
was
I don't know either, but I saw,
but
that.
Have
I saw
actually
that too.
Change her mind.
Right.
You know what? No, that's not what happened.
Yeah, that makes more sense, doesn't it?
Perfect. Plus, the NFL should look at that and say, yeah, we got to have that in our league next year.
And it's not as much filler, because that's where you get, you know, Nance and Romo having to look at it a thousand times with you. And
I don't
like,
know. What do you think? I don't know.
Let's bring in Gene. Gene, what do you think? And then Gene's never right, or he's like 50-50 on those. So, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. I mean, just like the XFL, with some of their camera angles, that was something that the NFL wasn't doing, and then they sort of stole it from the XFL. So some of these leagues may have
like
some
that.
Good ideas.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's things like that,
yeah,
which the NFL will say, you know what, we'll steal that, we'll take that, we like that. But do I think that the NFL is feeling any fear because of you know, competition for the AAF or the XFL? Not even a little.
They might kind of like it. Right? Like, because they all of a sudden, if they're looking for talent and a guy all of a sudden that you missed, and a lot of these guys were in practice squads anyway, like they said, over half the league has some NFL experience. Whether or not they were in a game, I don't know, but they at least were in a camp, on a roster, on a practice squad. And so if all of a sudden these late bloomers and they perform really well there, well, if they have the choice between doing another season there or joining your team in the NFL in the fall, they're going to clearly do that.
If you were putting an over-under number on how many guys from the AAF end up on, not practice squads, but legitimate NFL rosters next year? And I set the over-under number at 10.
That's a good number. I would say over, just over.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, think about it. There are guys that have these strange paths that played Arena League football or played, you know, in Europe or had to go to Canada, and then they came in there. And you figure 32 teams. So if one out of every three teams says, hey, we'll bring a guy in, we'll give him a shot, yeah, I think that could happen. Some of them, you know, were not in the league that long ago. I mean, think about Josh Johnson was a guy, I don't know if he played this weekend or not, but remember the Redskins signed him after he'd already been drafted.
We'll go eight deep on our quarterback depth chart.
So they needed him. They were running out of guys. Everybody was getting hurt, so they brought him in there. So I think so. I think there's I don't know how much talent the league necessarily has, but I think enough to get into an NFL camp, sure. But I just don't know if it'll ever be like, oh, I gotta watch the AAF this weekend. Like, I don't think that'll ever
I hit it by accident.
Happen.
I'm not going to lie to you. I hit it by accident. There really wasn't much buzz about it. There wasn't much, hey, don't miss the AAF, the debut of the AAF this weekend.
Nope, not at all.
I hit it initially because, you know, Jamie Erdahl's a friend of mine. I think she does really nice work. They've put her in a nice spot there. She did a nice job on the pregame
jobs,
show.
More jobs for media members.
Well, there
so
you
I'm
go.
In favor of it.
I watched a little bit of it, but I didn't stick with it.
No, I definitely did not.
And I probably won't seek it out on a weekly basis, will you?
No, not at all. I'm telling you,
And you're a big football fan.
I love football, but I have zero interest in it. If this was on head-to-head with a Duke or a Kentucky basketball game,
Celtics,
I'm watching
and,
that. Well, Celtics
Clippers
and Celtics Bruins is on another level. I got Celtics Bruins, but even like that next tier down, when you're sitting there looking around for something to watch, this is nowhere, not even close to on my radar. Like I just don't care. I know a lot of people were talking about it. It got a pretty good initial rating. I think it's smart. They had a couple of games on Saturday, a couple of games on Sunday.
Yep.
So that's smart. You're appealing to the college fans out there as well. So I get it. But I can't imagine in even 3 years we're talking about either of these leagues being around.
And next year, when you've got two of these.
Yeah, what is that? Good luck.
Two of these post-Super Bowl leagues trying to, you know, grab your attention at the same time.
I don't know where they're going to get all the talent for two of these leagues. I really
I didn't know who half the talent.
Well, that's my point.
I didn't know who 90% of the talent was this weekend.
And so think about that. You're going to create another. What is the XFL, Ross? Is it eight teams as well? Does that sound right?
Eight teams, yes. And they're playing in NFL stadiums.
So they have eight.
A good plan.
They have eight AAF teams and eight XFL teams. So you need 16 more rosters? Think about that. Think about the NFL. Think about who's on some of the quarterbacks that are on rosters. And then you have to find 16 other or like 32 other guys.
They're out there. There's plenty of talent
out
there.
No, there's not.
Have you not watched the league?
I would almost guarantee you that Vince McMahon or a representative of Vince McMahon has already offered Colin Kaepernick a job.
Kaepernick, Tebow, Manziel. It's as simple as that. Those are the three guys you need. Those are the three I would watch. If you told me Tim Tebow was playing yesterday, I would have watched it. If you told me that Johnny Manziel, I would have turned it on. Colin Kaepernick, I don't really care as much about, to be honest, like the football player. I know his story is more off the field. Tebow and Manziel, see those guys out there? I would watch that.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Mike's in Lawrence. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How are you?
I watched a little bit of the AAF this weekend, and I found it semi-entertaining. One of the things, I don't know if you watched it and you noticed it, did you notice how thin these guys are?
Thin? No.
Thin. Well, so they had some guys listed at like 6 feet tall, 175 pounds.
Yikes.
If you want,
they might not last long.
That's a little guy.
I'm not talking offensive linemen or linemen. I'm just talking about, you know, like the running backs and some of the receivers. And I noticed that they're from the waist down, they were just built differently than NFL athletes. They just don't have that power. But I was semi-entertained. But I think we all know what Mike Martz has been up to since he's been out of the
eating.
NFL.
Yeah.
Eating the buffet.
Well, yeah, he's, what are you going to do, you know?
But I say give it a chance. I think it's going to be, I think it might be a quick, speedy game with some arena element to it where some gadget plays are tried more often than not. It might be kind of entertaining.
Oh, you know what? That's another good point, Mike. The games that went by pretty quick. I think that's also an advantage for them. Like, I don't think, now there's four games, I don't know what all the times were on all of them, but I don't think they were three hours, 15 minutes, like a lot of NFL games are. I think they were a lot quicker, so that could help them out.
Jackson, Rhode Island. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Great.
I just wanted to figure out if I read the correct stuff about the AAF and their sort of like minor league affiliation with the NFL. I read that each team would be like partnered with four or five NFL teams and then one CFL team, and their rights as a player are technically owned by those teams. Did I get that right?
I don't know about that. I don't think that's right.
I was just trying to read up and figure out how in the world they're going to thrive and survive, but that aspect kind of made a little bit of sense to me. It's all based on region, and they're owned by the NFL teams and CFL team that are around where they went to college or where they grew up. Thought that was kind of interesting. I just wanted to see if you guys had anything to
say. I have no idea on that.
Yeah.
No, I have no clue. I don't think they're... Now, I was surprised to see that they were on the NFL Network. Like, that I didn't realize was... They have to have some sort of connection, but... Rossi, do you know what...
There's an league affiliation, but there's not... What he's talking about is not part
of... They don't have, like the Patriots AAF team is so-and-so.
Right, they don't have that.
It's not like they have a minor league affiliation. You know, it's not like the NFL teams are subsidizing these rosters.
Yeah.
This is Charlie Ebersol's idea here, Dick Ebersol's son. He came up with this whole thing. Maybe this will work.
It says the alliance operates as a single entity with all the teams owned and operated by the league.
Right.
So, yeah, forget the
NFL
stuff.
You want to talk about price fixing and collusion?
Yeah.
When you have one entity owning all the teams, you can pretty much set the price, can't you?
So also, players are expected to get three-year non-guaranteed contracts worth $250,000 plus health insurance with an escape clause to go to the NFL. So
there you go.
All right.
Chris Mannix is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about the plight of the Boston Celtics and what Brad Stevens can do from here. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEE.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah.
Follow Dale on Twitter at Dale E. Arnold. This is Dale and Keith on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. By the way, the liquid oxycodone's kicking in.
How are you feeling?
You're looking real good to me right
now. Am I?
Oh, so much more attractive than you were minutes ago. Yeah.
Good. So what you're telling me...
You've got kind of a haze around you.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Like our show photo.
Very much
kind
like
of that.
That
little halo glow
it's like
to
shooting
it.
Barbara Streisand through the Vaseline lens or something.
Interesting.
You know?
All right. Well, that's good to know.
I mean, I can take an Uber from here to the garden.
I think
later,
you can.
Huh?
Yeah. You should be good. You'll be fine for the beanpot.
Good.
I think so.
Who's playing?
A couple of the local teams.
We've been talking. We started earlier on in the program talking about the Celtics and the situation that they're in. Who better to talk about the NBA and all things concerning basketball than our buddy Chris Mannix? Hey, Chris, how are you?
What's happening, fellas?
I'm doing great. I'm sort of wondering at this point, is Brad Stevens going to be in for some of the first real criticism of his Celtics tenure?
I mean, the short answer is yes. You know, up until this point, he's taken a place among the NBA elite coaches. But up until this point, he's kind of coached the underdog teams, the teams with not low expectation necessarily, but tempered expectations. This is the first year where there have been outsized expectations, and this team has failed to meet them. There certainly appears to be locker room chemistry issues. There are obviously on-court chemistry issues. And, you know, we spent 4 years, guys, praising Brad Stevens, deservedly so. I still believe he's one of the best head coaches in the NBA. But, you know, when you get the praise, the criticism comes with it.
What's the Brad Stevens-Kyrie Irving relationship like?
I think it's fine. I don't think it's as... Look, one of the reasons that Brad Stevens has developed such a strong rapport with the likes of Isaiah and Evan Turner and Jay Crowder and so many guys who have come through here is that they have been, you know, average to above average players that Brad has elevated to a higher level. I mean, Kyrie Irving came to Boston already at the highest of levels. He's an all-NBA point guard. And while I think there's a healthy amount of respect between the two, and certainly a lot of conversation that goes on between the two, it's just not the same situation, really, as any player that Brad has coached before. All that being said, I mean, you know, Kyrie has seen just how good an X's and O's coach that he is. He's seen what happened in the playoffs last year when the Celtics made their run and Brad's contributions to it. So I think it's strong. I just don't think you can compare it to any of the other relationships because of what Kyrie was coming in.
We had this argument earlier on in the program where I said the Celtics were a better team last year than what they've been so far this year. How stupid is that?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think they just had, I mean, they just had better chemistry last year, and everybody kind of knew their roles and embraced their roles. And I do think having, you know, lower than normal expectations going into the postseason, even as a high seed, benefited them. You know, they still were kind of this upstart team led by a whole bunch of young players with their two superstars on the sideline. But they played together. And, you know, the ball moved and everybody knew, you know, who the top offensive option was. Most nights that was going to be Jason Tatum. Terry Rozier knew he was going to get 35 minutes a night as a starting point guard. Al Horford was the glue guy kind of putting it all together. They just seemed to be really comfortable, you know, playing, you know, with each other. This group, you know, not so much. And, you know, every time we think we have a bead on what this team is, you know, December, 8-game winning streak. All right, they start to turn it around. Then they stumble over the holidays. You know, the month of January, 10-1 at home during that stretch. They figured some things out. These last two games, blowing 18, you know, 20-plus point leads to inferior teams. It just, every time they take two steps forward, they take one big step back, and it's pretty hard to explain.
Now, Marcus Morris's comments were obviously pretty damning over the weekend, talking about how, you know, they're not having any fun, and, you know, you look around the league and other teams are having fun, guys on the bench are rooting for each other, and somebody even followed up, you might have even been there, somebody followed up about, well, when you guys won 10 out of 11, was that fun? And he wouldn't even give you that. He was just like, nah, it hasn't been fun here. So what does that say about the you mentioned chemistry already, but it seems like this group certainly does not enjoy playing together.
Yeah, you know, at times, from where I sit, at times it seems like there's just almost a competition between the veteran players and the younger players. And we've seen it kind of manifest itself in some dust-ups. Jaylen Brown has been involved in some. And look, every time there is you know, something goes wrong. I mean, Marcus Morris took it to a different level, but how many times after games that they've struggled have we heard effort? And how many times have we felt like that's been a veteran player targeting one of the young players? And I think that's kind of increased the divide within the locker room. I don't think they don't like each other. I just think there are a lot of guys in different places in their careers, and they're all trying to do different things. Plus, you have Gordon Hayward, who is, you know, trying to find his way while trying to find his rhythm at the same time. It's just a very kind of discombobulated bunch that's inside that Celtic locker room.
Let's put you in the unfair position of putting yourself in the shoes of Brad Stevens. Short term, what can you do?
I don't know. He's talked about shaking up the lineup. I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, I thought what they did in, was it November, December, you know, moving Jaylen Brown out, moving Marcus Morris and Smart into the lineup, that was the right thing to do. You brought two guys in that don't need shots. And over the last couple of – look, we can't dismiss what they did in January. I mean, what they did in January was pretty impressive, putting together wins. Jaylen Brown had his best month of the season in January. Everybody seemed to be on the same page. And, you know, frankly, when Aaron Baines goes out, that's become problematic for this team because he's another one of those guys that rebounds, defends, doesn't need the ball, just sets monster screens. That's the type of guy they need to have in their rotation. So I don't think you shake too much up. I think you just got to hope that, you know, you come up with a win, you know, in Philadelphia on Tuesday, maybe give yourself some momentum, and then after the All-Star break, you can get back to playing like the team we saw in January.
Yeah, I was going to say, they got at Philadelphia, at Milwaukee, at Toronto all this month.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that they're at any kind of risk of missing the playoffs, but how important could seeding be for this team? We saw the difference last year. I know Kyrie was hurt, but home and road was certainly very different for this team.
No, it's monstrous. I mean, you know, the last couple of years, I mean, think about where this team would be if it didn't have home court advantage in a handful of rounds. You know, last year they probably lose in the first round to Milwaukee. A couple of years ago, they probably lose to Washington if they don't have home court advantage in that second round. I mean, every year they've relied on that garden floor in Game 7, the energy that comes with it. And it's even more significant now, guys. I mean, you look at the numbers. Every time they go to Toronto, they get walloped. Like, it's last season it wasn't even close. It was like 19 points per game they lost by when they went up to Toronto. I mean, Philadelphia, you know, we can talk about what they've done, but I, you know, watching them yesterday, they're downright scary offensively. And Milwaukee, you know, people will tell you they're probably the best team in the Eastern Conference. I mean, this is a team that badly needs to string together some wins and get as high as that number two seed. I mean, if you can get the number two seed and get yourself home court advantage in the second round, I think you give yourself a shot of getting to the finals. If you don't, you become an underdog as soon as that second round starts.
Let's look at things a little more league-wide right now, because the NBA has itself a mess in New Orleans. Anthony Davis, through his agent, says basically he wants out. He's made it very clear that there's only a team or two that he would even consider being traded to, but he wants to be traded to one of those two teams. Now the question is, are they going to play him? Are they not going to play him? It's a $100,000 per game fine if you violate the NBA's anti-resting policy. And yet they sat him out for the whole fourth quarter of a game the other day doing just that.
Yeah, this has become, the last week I've seen some biblically bungling of things across the NBA. I mean, it just, from the trade demand that didn't need to be made public to Dell Demps in New Orleans just basically sending Magic Johnson a voicemail for an entire week, and all the fallout from all this. And the trickle down is like, you know, now here comes Chandler Parsons. He's got to go back to Memphis because everybody across the league was calling saying, you let this guy go home, you know, for a month. Why are you letting that happen? So this has just been a mess that the NBA has no idea. Their opinions on all this change almost by the day in that league office. And look, I don't fault New Orleans in this at all. Like, the Pelicans, you know, they knew Anthony Davis was not signing an extension. They knew that. Especially as this season started to derail in November, December. They knew that they were going to have to trade him. But, you know, having their hand forced has created such a mess out there. And now, you know, they just went through this last year with DeMarcus Cousins tearing his Achilles. They know the importance of Anthony Davis and what he could bring back to their franchise in a potential trade in terms of players and draft picks. I mean, I wrote this before. Anthony Davis is Herschel Walker. Like, he has the ability to turn that franchise around if they trade him and get the right package back. Why in the world would they want to play him? Look, if Anthony Davis has the quote-unquote right to say he wants to be traded out of New Orleans sooner rather than later, I think the Pelicans have the right to say, we're not going to play him. We got to protect our investment. I think the NBA needs to do a circle back on this, or else Anthony Davis needs to come up with a nice case of plantar fasciitis to keep him out for the rest of the season.
Do you think he ends up in Boston next year, around July, when all is said and done?
It's so hard to predict right now. I mean, all things being equal, yes, but if the Celtics stumble, fall in the first round, the Knicks get Kevin Durant, the Knicks get the number one pick. Look, I was saying as early as late June last year that the Knicks were a scary team for the Celtics in terms of the courtship of Kyrie Irving, and they remain that way. I mean, it was one thing when they were the gang that couldn't shoot straight with a malfunctioning front office. They still kind of do have a malfunctioning, you know, upper level of the front office with James Dolan, but if they can somehow get Zion and Kevin Durant, I mean, it might be tough to retain Kyrie that way. But if this team makes a run and Kyrie decides to stay, you know, Kyrie becomes a recruiting tool. I mean, it's real that those two want to play together. Like, that's a real thing that they've talked about in the past. So if Kyrie stays and he becomes a recruiter, I think it's more likely than not Anthony Davis is in Boston.
It feels like this sort of started in Miami with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. But this whole idea of players basically deciding, I want this guy, I want that guy, I want that guy. Hasn't this become just an all-encompassing a disaster for the NBA anyway?
Sort of. You know, everything you're saying is true along the same lines. I mean, the league loves that they're a soap opera. Like, there are certain things they don't want, like this Davis situation spiraling. But I don't think they mind, you know, Anthony Davis and trade season getting in the way of the Super Bowl. Like, I think they're kind of happy to take some of the shine away from the NFL. And they've kind of embraced, you know, being a transaction-heavy league. So I think that they're okay with parts of it. The thing they're not, like, one of the side notes in all this is that, you know, the Lakers have become just the team that nobody wants to deal with. And part of that's Magic Johnson. Like, there are a lot of people that believe Magic Johnson has been tampering with Anthony Davis. And then Magic goes out yesterday and says that Ben Simmons wants to learn how to play, you know, be a big guard, wants big guard secrets. So he's going to check with the league to see if Ben Simmons, also represented by LeBron's agent, can work with him this summer. Like, the Lakers have become kind of this toxic team that nobody wants to deal with because everybody thinks they're tampering with their players.
And then didn't Magic and the Lakers say that the Pelicans weren't dealing in good faith when it came to all the trade rumors?
I mean, that's just dumb too. I can picture Del Demps. You guys remember like the George Costanza voicemail, like, believe it or not,
right,
Del isn't at home.
Right.
I'm thinking that's what he was doing the entire time. I said on Monday of this past week they were never going to trade Anthony Davis before the deadline, and you know, I don't know what good faith means. Like, you know, it's not their, they didn't respond, and it's not their responsibility to respond. They don't have to trade, you know, the Lakers, you know, their best player if it doesn't make any sense to them. And every logical conclusion is that it doesn't make any sense to them.
Now, as it stands right now, it's February 11th, so there's a ton of season left to be played, but who would be your pick to win the East?
I love Milwaukee right now. I do. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that they're a great regular season team that maybe isn't as equipped to win the playoffs. Mike Budenholzer certainly doesn't have a great track record in the postseason, but everything they have done is exactly what you want a team to do when your star is Giannis. Like, they have just put shooter after shooter around him. And when you can clear that much space for Giannis, he is impossible to stop going downhill. You know, they're always going to have the best player on the floor in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And with home court advantage, they're going to be that much tougher. So I lean towards Milwaukee, but, you know, whoever has momentum at the end of the year, guys, is going to be big. And that's why I think Boston still has a chance to get back in this. If they can get some of their stuff right over the next couple of months, they still have more than enough talent to be the top team in the East.
Final question for me. You wrote about this earlier today. Why is Russell Westbrook not being considered more as MVP when he's about to average a triple-double for his third consecutive year?
I don't know, man. Like, this, it just occurred to me after, you know, watching him play the Rockets on Saturday. He tied Wilt Chamberlain for the most consecutive triple-doubles in a season. He's about to do for the third time something that it was like Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak. It was, you know, name your impossible record to eclipse, and Russell Westbrook is about to do it three straight times. He's incredibly inefficient this season. His shooting numbers are way down from what they've been in years past. That's kind of a byproduct of you know, a knee surgery early in the season and a really nasty ankle sprain that he dealt with in November. But, I mean, we're going to look back, you know, 10, 15 years from now when somebody, maybe it's Ben Simmons, maybe it's somebody else, averages a triple-double in a season, and then we're going to go, well, Russell did it for three straight seasons. I think we're going to have a greater appreciation for all things Russell Westbrook when his career is over.
Always appreciate the time, Chris. Thank you. And you said the NBA doesn't mind soap opera. They still got one here in Boston.
They got one.
Yeah, and they love it. They love every minute of it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it, guys.
Take care. That is Chris Mannix joining us talking about the Celtics and the NBA. I read his piece earlier today about Russell Westbrook. Think about this. It was thought that nobody will ever average a triple-double. He's about to do it for the third consecutive year, and yet when you talk about MVP, his name never comes up.
Well, he is wildly inefficient this year. Chris was putting it mildly. He is shooting 41% from the field, 24.6% from three. And he's had a lot of games. Now, they're actually in third place, so give him credit. They're in third place, not like a lot of losses, but a lot of times I feel like ESPN is as guilty as anybody, is they'll put up a graphic. They're like, Russell Westbrook does it again. And he'll be like, you know, 25, 10, and 10 in a loss or something like that. So he's kind of a frustrating player. His stats are off the charts, but I also don't know how far you're going to go with him either.
Biblically bungling.
Yeah, I liked it.
I could not say that one time fast, let alone three times fast. That was.
I don't know if we could have asked him to repeat it.
No.
That was biblically bungling.
But it was pretty impressive.
Well done.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously. But shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
U-E-E-I.
Get connected with Rich Keefe on Twitter at Keefe21. Now back to more of Dale and Keefe on Sports Radio WEEI.
What Marcus is saying, and I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago when they were kind of going through their little bitty, that first kind of bump in the road where Kyrie was apologizing to LeBron. What he was saying in those moments was more about like, hey, we need guys to be more selfless. And in that moment, he was saying, when I spoke to him, he said, look, I think after the trade deadline will be cool. I think there's a little tension. I think guys are trying to figure out their role, where they're going to go, what the team is going to do. And so after the trade deadline, the deadline's gone, and then you come in there and you have a 20-plus lead and you lose to the Clippers that are trying to go the other direction, that's when he's like, okay, trade deadline's gone. So now this is our team that's going to enter into the playoffs, and we need to play better.
Richard Jefferson earlier today on First Take, talking about the Celtics issues. I mean, you've got teams in the NBA who are legitimately, honestly trying to tank. And I understand that. Zion Williamson looked really good.
Yeah. And the Clippers are one of them.
And the Clippers are one of them.
And they still come back from 30 down.
I mean, the Celtics are not trying to tank.
No,
obviously,
they're not.
They're a playoff team. And yet, they looked like they were trying to tank Saturday night.
We're back to back. I mean, Thursday night, they had an 18-point lead. And then they have a 28-point lead on Saturday. It's just ridiculous. I think they really are a selfish team. I think like each guy individually is selfish. And then you put them out there together, and this is what you get. So, because I am definitely a proponent of talent. And in the NBA, talent wins out. But this group hasn't been able to figure it out, at least consistently, playing together. It doesn't seem like the roles are very well defined. And a big part of that has to be Brad Stevens. But also some of the other guys have to accept what their role is. I mean, you go back to the title team, the last Celtics title team, those guys, Allen, Pierce, and Garnett, all gave up shots that they normally would have in years past when they were the guy on their team. But then everybody else fit in so perfectly. You had a young Rondo, you had a young Perk, you had Eddie House and Posey off the bench with Cassell and Brown. Like every guy, it was very clear what their roles were. Even Golden State, with all the star power that they have, their roles, pretty well defined. The Celtics' roles? I mean, if you ask Jaylen Brown what he really thinks he should be doing compared to what they're asking him to do, or you go down the list, and then all the while, Gordon Hayward, doesn't even know what kind of player he is anymore, and he's trying to fit in with everybody else. It just it's much more of a mess than I certainly ever saw coming.
So Kyrie Irving had an MRI. He's been diagnosed with a strained right knee, listed as day-to-day. I think he really wants to play in the All-Star game. So, you know, the idea of this thing stretching out for some extended period of time probably won't work for him.
Well, hopefully he plays tomorrow against Philly. You know, I mean, that's the thing, too. It's not like they have, you know, he sat out, the Cleveland game, and he sat out. They pick and choose. Like, he and Horford, like, there are certain games where they're just resting, or they might say hip with Irving, but it's pretty strategic when it's against really bad teams. Against Philly, I think you would want him out there. But, yeah, they have two games left. Then the All-Star break, so we'll see.
And he's
going to
want to play in the All-Star game.
Oh, of course.
Although he wasn't the first player picked by your guy.
Thank God. But he was the second.
He was the second.
Durant was the first.
I actually liked the first pick better.
So those guys are probably going to... So Durant and Irving will be in the locker room together, and they're going to decide they're going to New York, and then they'll go there next year. And then they'll be like, oh, yeah, it was because LeBron drafted us, and then... And we decided to go play together. And Anthony Davis is on their team. It's a whole thing.
We touched on this briefly with Chris Mannix, but I'm curious to get your take on this. We mentioned earlier, there are teams who are legit a generational talent, a franchise-changing talent, and they're saying, we got to do whatever we have to do to get that guy. And I even understand, in general, the philosophy of doing that. The Pittsburgh Penguins did it for Mario Lemieux, and it completely shifted their fortunes forever.
Crosby, too, didn't they? Wasn't that Crosby, Malkin, back-to-back?
It was even more...
Lemieux was even more egregious.
They absolutely tanked to get Mario Lemieux, and they made the right move. I just wonder what the NBA can do. Now, in the situation with Anthony Davis, I understand the Pelicans' concern here. If he gets hurt, what's he going to be worth to us on the trade market in the offseason?
Yeah, it's weird.
By the same token... If you're a season ticket holder and you bought tickets for the Pelicans games based on wanting to see the best player on the team and you sit him down for the whole fourth quarter, or maybe you go that next step further. Maybe, you know what, he's fine, but we're not going to play him in this game on Thursday night.
Well, he got booed, too. I mean, he got booed.
Oh, they are pissed.
Of course they would be. I mean, think about it, if it played out like this with... I mean, even as beloved as Paul Pierce won, say they never won the deal and it was just a guy that was always on the team, was always really good, then all of a sudden demands a trade, then, you know, is wants out, and his dad's talking about loyalty, even though he's the one that wants out. I mean, just think about the face of your franchise wanting out, and then you're stuck with him for the rest of the year.
By the way, and why did you have to bring it up now?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, trying to force that trade right now.
It was such a technical mistake on their part.
Well, it's LeBron and Rich Paul. It was his agent, and they saw, they're like, oh my God, this is going to be a lost year for LeBron in L.A. They're like, this team stinks.
Like, he didn't know that before the season started?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they thought they were going to get somebody else there. Maybe they thought they were going to be able to have a better offseason than JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, and Lance Stephenson. I don't know what they thought. Or they thought at least by the deadline they'd get somebody, and they probably thought all along, hey, we're going to... Because think about it, at the beginning of the year, Rich Paul or Anthony Davis fires his agent and goes with LeBron's agent. So he's clearly trying to get to L.A., and maybe they thought, hey, we really force them. These NBA teams, they won't want to have to deal with the situation like they have now, so they'll trade him. And the Lakers have all these young players they could throw into a package, and we'll get them. And then it doesn't happen, and now it's a lost year for the Lakers, which is great, but then it's also a disaster for the Pelicans, because... I think he should just play, but then I'm also not the one that would have to deal with it if he gets hurt and all of a sudden he's coming back from an ACL and teams are like, well, forget this. He's going to come for only a half a season next year and off of an injury. No, thank you.
I mean, Greg Popovich, you know, was really the father of resting players.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, screw the season ticket holders, screw the ticket buying public. I want to do what's best for my team. But he was doing it in the interest of ensuring that he had a championship-caliber roster
and it worked
going into
well.
The playoffs.
You know,
and
he had a lot of old guys, and it worked for him.
That's not the same as teams who are intentionally sitting out guys because, damn it, we really need that first overall pick.
Yeah, so they've done
which you aren't guaranteed, by the way, even when you tank.
Right, and so they've done a better job this year. You know, they're really trying to make sure that teams don't do it in primetime games. They affected the schedule, like back-to-backs with primetime games. Like, they tried to take that away so guys wouldn't miss these marquee games. Plus, there's a fine in there, like the resting
$100,000 a game. Yeah. Which, and in this case, if the Pelicans sat him down the rest of the season, it would cost them $2.5 million, which is a lot of money to you and me. Well, it's a lot of money to me.
It's a lot of money to you.
Yeah, to me, not to you. No. It's a lot of money to me.
Pretty well.
But for the Pelicans, it would be like, okay. So?
But also, they're paying Anthony.
What are you going
to
do?
They're also paying Anthony Davis a ton of money to
well,
not
they gotta
play.
Well, they got to pay him either way.
No, I understand
they
that.
Or they don't want
to
win.
But to not play, though, is just, ugh. Like, this is. So on the one hand, you get these great soap opera angles that makes the league interesting, even from the outside. Like all these guys, these big name players, they do move teams. There's so much drama, but it does come at a price at certain times. And with this one, it's like, all right, now you have one of the five best players in the league that's probably going to be held out. Even his fan base has turned on him. Like nobody's rooting for Anthony Davis anymore. And then you just have to wait and see where he goes. And then the team that trades for him, like, here's a guy that didn't play basketball for the last 4 months of the season, or last 3 months of the season. Like, it's just, it's a really weird situation.
And if you're, and what I think inevitably what they'd prefer to do is just play him on the road. If we have to play him, because the NBA is going to make us, but then you're really screwing your season ticket holders, people who pay the freight for you.
And what was he
doing? Wait a minute, you're going to play him in Charlotte, but you're not going to play him here at home?
Well, that was weird, too, the other night where he plays three quarters. Didn't he have like 32 points or something like that in 24 minutes?
And then they say, come on, sit down over here. And then they win anyway, by the way.
Yeah.
So they're saying, we had a plan.
See,
you know?
We know what we're doing.
We knew exactly how we were going to approach this.
That is just ugly. That's the ugly side of all this NBA drama.
617-779-7937. Derek's in Boston. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
What's going on?
You know, this as much as we're saying it's too much talent, it's Gordon Hayward's not right, this is by far, this is time to use as a measuring stick for Brad Stevens. What kind of coach? We know he's a great coach, but that doesn't mean he's a championship coach, because Doug Collins was a great coach and wasn't a championship coach. He built a team. He knew how to get people to overachieve, but he didn't have to bring in free agents like Doc Rivers having to use all those personnel. Phil Jackson comes to mind, melding personalities. You know you got the talent, but can you get them to work together? And the reason why I say that, during your call with your guest, he said that, you know, this is the first time where Brad Stevens has had to deal with, you know, a superstar caliber player, because he's gotten everybody else to overachieve. These are homegrown guys that you've built up, or, you know, castaway free agents that you've kind of rejuvenated. But Rajon Rondo was a pretty established player at the time that they had, I don't want to call it differences, but they had to have a sit down and discuss philosophies, and it was determined by Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge, and Rondo that it was best that Rondo move on. So I don't know if that's what's going on. You know, he said that there wasn't a big personality clash between Kyrie and Brad, but if it's just long-term philosophical differences, you got to take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, that was definitely the best player he had prior to this most recent run. It's a tougher example for me because
it always seems like Rondo has issues everywhere.
Yeah, like he and Rick Carlisle, and Rick Carlisle is one of the best coaches in the NBA. That was a disaster from Jump Street. He and Doc Rivers obviously had their highs and lows. There was, you know, he threw the iced tea can at him or whatever that one time. So he's had issues with a lot of different coaches, so that's why I would kind of put that one to the side. But it's a fair point. I mean, that was one already established star that he had to coach. All these other guys were kind of throw-ins and trades, or sort of guys that were kicked around or lower picks, and he got a lot out of them. But now you have multiple all-stars on your team. You have one true superstar on your team, and it does not seem to be going very well.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.